So good afternoon from Vienna. Good afternoon from Synapse Vienna. We are going for another presentation now, for another Neurocast in English, because we want to be global. And we are particularly happy to do the very first Neurocast together with the Viennese Physician Society. This is a society with a long tradition, the Billroth Society. We are very happy that we have this collaboration now with the Billroth Society that gives us the possibility to do Neurocasts in the future in cooperation with them, but also hybrid Neurocasts. And so it's a very exciting cooperation because it's so a long history. And I'm really happy today to have Dr. Rumia from Barcelona. He's a functional neurosurgeon. And he is in a very lucky situation that he has an MRI-focused interventional device. He will show us what it is. This is something that is relatively recent. It's used for making lesions in the brain, very precise lesions in the brain under MRI guidance. But I think he is the best to explain it to us. And welcome and thank you, Dr. Rumia, to be with us today. Please.
Good afternoon. First of all, I would like to thank indeed this nice invitation. It's for me a honor to share our experience in front of you. And especially I would like to thank Professor Alish, a good friend and good colleague for many years, to share this experience. Can we have the screen already? Can you see the screen?
Yes.
Great. Today I'm going to give a small description of what is magnetic resonance focused ultrasound, or also called HIFU, that are the letters for high intensity focused ultrasound, just in the field of neuronal disorders. This is a new tool that we use in the stereotactic and functional neurosurgery to produce very tiny lesions in the brain in selected places, thanks to high intensity acoustic energy focused very precisely inside the brain. Since the ultrasounds, the beams, go through the skull and the skin, it is not necessary to do skin opening or skull opening, though, and there's no surgical path across the brain. So it's a technique really non-invasive, and the effects compared to other techniques, for example, those using gamma rays, the effects on the brain and the function are immediate. I'm sorry the video is not running properly, but this is a patient during the treatment. Here we have the ultrasound and the magnetic resonance. I would like to go across 4 points: the technology implied in this technique, the procedure, how we do it, the indications for what we use this tool, at least so far. And there are many potential indications that will be employed in the future, but it's beyond the scope of this talk. And what are the outcomes that are improving with every year? Let's talk about the technology. Focus ultrasound, the transcranial focus ultrasound, has many effects on the biology. The most from immunomodulation, opening the blood-brain barrier, which is a barrier that separates the blood from the brain and prevents us from doing some treatment actions in some cases. But the most used is the thermal ablation, which means causing very tiny, very selective lesions inside the brain with therapeutic goals. The coagulation of proteins inactivates the neurons we want to inactivate. For example, those neurons that direct the tremor, that drive the tremor. Ultrasounds are high intensity, high energy waves of sound of very, very high frequency around 500 kilohertz applied to a very determined point in the brain. Here we have a video, I don't know if it's going to, but it's very demonstrative. The ultrasounds are applied on a gel with a conductivity similar to those of the brain. And we can see here as how a discrete, very well-defined lesion appears without affecting the surrounding tissue. So we have a discrete thermal lesion, immediate lesion with no effect on the surrounding tissue. So we have immediate effect that allows us to check what we are doing, and no intervening tissue, no path across the brain to reach this point. The idea, as good as it is, started to be applied in the 50s, but at that time there were many limitations because it was not possible to cross the skull, the cranium barrier. Neuroimaging was not developed at that time, and it was not possible to measure the temperature in the point we were applying the ultrasound. I was fortunately with the advent of magnetic resonance imaging, when the system was immediately coupled with MRI. Focused ultrasound and MRI were born to be together, used together, and as soon as in the 80s, trials were started. But the first commercial system, it took around 10 years to appear, and the first cranial application was in 2008. The system obtained the CE mark, the approval for normal clinical practice, not for experimental practice, but for clinical practice in 2012. We in Barcelona, in the Alomar Medical Center, started in 2015. We were the second center in continental Europe to employ this technique. And since then, FDA approval in the States and many other regulatory agencies around the world, in the Canadian and Japanese and many others. So at the end of last year, more than 4,000 patients had been treated with success, and in 60 countries, there were installed more than 80 systems around the world. The main issue was measuring the temperature inside the brain, and the second, to cross the skull barrier. The cranium is a formidable barrier to cross by the ultrasounds. How can we get this? First of all, we have to calculate the skull density ratio, because then we will know if what kind of attenuation the skull, the cranium is going to provoke in the ultrasound. And besides, if the cranium is not homogeneous, it may induce reflection and refraction, implying that the system overheats. And besides, the focal point is somewhat blurred, defocused. The technical feature that allows to correct this is using the CT of the skull of the patient to do a digital mask that will correct the focusing problems. This is a tremendous engineering feat, and it's what has allowed us to overcome the skull barrier. On the other hand, the system, at least the system we use, is done by the company Inside Tech from Israel, is composed by more than 1,000 transduced, focused into a isocenter and target. And as I said, we use the CT to correct the focusing. And at the same time, the CT is co-registered with a real-time MRI, which allows us to see, obviously, anatomy. MRI during the procedure allows us to see the brain, but at the same time, it allows us to have a thermometry, a measuring, continuous measuring of temperature during the procedure, which is also very important. This is an schematic view of the system. We have circulating the gas water to prevent burns from the skull and to improve ultrasound transmission from the transducer to the skull, a membrane that prevents the water to pour, the phrase-to-phrase transducer of more than 1,000 elements, this stereotactic frame that fixes the head and allows us to obtain a very precise targeting, the stereotactic positioning system, and of course the MRI scanner, which allows us to see the brain and to measure temperature. This is the real thing. This is how I would explain this. This is the membrane. Here we have the transducer, the stereotactic frame, the patient. We put the patient as comfortable as possible. And here we have the MR board that allows us to have a continuous control on how things are going. How do we do this? It's a very systematic, stepwise procedure. First of all, we have to shape the patient's head, since the hair does not allow the ultrasound to cross. We put the stereotactic frame, as in the other stereotactic procedure, and the membrane, and we place the patient in the MR. Then we calculated the targeting, put the target in the brain, and start doing sonications. Sonications are ultrasound shots. We now start delivering the maximum temperature, but we start with low temperatures to know where we are. Second, to verify where are we getting, and then once we are sure in which part of the thalamus we are, we go through the ablation at 50 degrees. Here we can see the effect on the tremor on the writings on a patient. We have control of the imaging and control of the temperature, besides control of the patient. We remove the system, and we also do a control MR just to be sure that everything is okay after the operation. This is how we target the part of the brain, in this case for tremor, the thalamus, which is not very different from the target we use with other imaging and stereotactic modalities, for radio frequency thalamotomy, for gamma knife thalamotomy, or even for deep brain stimulation, which is the most used technique nowadays. This is the volume we depict in our tractography, and this is how we put the target for our thalamotomy. And then we co-register these coordinates with the ones that we use in the focus ultrasound system. This is the main screen in the focus ultrasound system. We have a lot of information here. The main one is anatomy in this line. Here we have the time to temperature scale. And here we see how temperature increases at the time that the sonication is occurring. And when the sonication stops, for example, here the sonication stops at 15 seconds, then the temperature in the brain, in this spot of the brain, immediately decreases. Why the brain refrigerates so fast? Because there is blood circulation, and because there is cerebrospinal fluid circulation. And this refrigerates the brain, preventing that any other parts of the brain get heated. We also have many other controls, as the coordinates. We also have the control of if any kind of bubble, or we technically call it cavitation, appears, could be compromising for patient safety. And here we have the level of energy we are delivering, and how many times, during how much time we are delivering every sonication to the patient. As an average, we would say that we deliver around 10, 12 sonications for a given patient. The first of them from aligning, the second set is for checking the result, and the third, once we are sure where we are, it's a treatment, it's coagulation. Here you can see this kind of three phases of anatomic localization. Once we know we are in place, we check the effects on patient, not only good effects, how we get rid of tremor, but also to prevent permanent adverse or unwanted effects. And once we are sure, then is when we proceed to the treatment temperature around 58, 16 degrees, into the coagulation and permanent lesion zone. This is how an immediate postoperative MR looks of a thalamotomy. This is this tiny spot in the ventral, in the inferior and lateral part of the thalamus between the motor thalamus and the sensitive thalamus. That's why we call this nucleus ventro-intermediate nucleus of the thalamus in the ventral part. Here we have a small part of necrosis at the surrounding a bigger lesion. And with the days, some edema, which we call is the name, technical name for inflammation after the lesion, appears. At the first day, we see, or the first week, we see this edema, which is remarkable, but in few weeks it disappears and shrinks, and finally at 6 months the lesion is barely identifiable, which does not mean that the technical the clinical effect, that the effect of tremor fades away. It's just the image. What are we using this for? Mainly we are using for tremor. The main indication, at least in the European Union, for this technique, for focus ultrasound, for a high-intensity focus ultrasound, are tremors, especially essential tremor and tremor-dominant Parkinson disease or Parkinsonian tremor. Those are the main indications. There's another indication, but it's beyond the movement disorders, which is neuropathic pain. We also go to the thalamus, but to the sensory part of the thalamus to treat neuropathic tremors. But the main indications is in movement disorders are tremors, especially those patients who have unilateral or very asymmetric disease. I mean, if the patient is shaking much more in his or her dominant hand, in the right hand in the majority of cases, then the patient is a very good candidate for focus ultrasound thalamotomy in this kind of drug-resistant or drug-refractory tremors. Other tremor syndromes have been treated with success. We published the first case of fragile X-associated tremor ataxia syndrome in a patient whose brain atrophy was too big to be treated with deep brain stimulation. And we have also treated some rural or Holmes tremor consequent to multiple sclerosis, trauma, or even stroke in the brainstem. So the main application is drug-resistant tremor or tremors in the case that the drug treatment provokes some unacceptable unwanted effects. In which cases we think twice in proposing in offering this treatment to the patient? When the skull density ratio I mentioned before, when the permeability of the patient's bone to ultrasound is very, very low, under 0.30, which in Western patients is less frequent than, for example, in Eastern patients. Our colleagues in Korea or in Japan have big problems with this issue, but this is not the case in Europe. When the patient has cranial abnormalities, for example, a very thick bone, what we call hyperostosis, or bone diseases as Paget's disease, or craniotomies in some patients with craniotomies, or even tumors that change the shape of the cranial bone. Some patients have non-compatible metal implants, for example, pacemakers or prosthetic heart valves. In this case, the contraindication, it is not due to the focus ultrasound, but the formal contraindication for the magnetic resonance field. And of course, those patients that cannot cooperate because they are too young, they have dementia, or patients who suffer from claustrophobia. In those patients, it is not a formal contraindication, but if the patient cannot cooperate with the medical and surgical team, then the treatment is especially difficult. Please take note that in I have not mentioned age, since this is a closed procedure, and the patient is discharged in just 24 hours after one overnight stays in the hospital, and we don't have to open the skull or the skin. We don't have age limit apart from the ability to cooperate with the team. We have operated patients above 86 years of age, and I have read reports of patients close to their 90s who have been treated. Those patients would be ruled out for other treatment modalities, as for example, for deep brain stimulation. As I anticipate, SDR can be a problem related to final outcome. We participated in a multicentric study. It's the bibliographic note is written down, when we studied the impact of a school density ratio on the efficacy and safety. And we were able to find that between 30 and 45, it is a conditioning factor, a strong conditioning factor, but it's not determinant. The main thing is to optimize the heating efficiency with a strategic management of the sonication parameters, not doing many sonications at low temperature, but doing as few sonications as possible with high energy. And besides, in some patients, we can increase bone conductivity or bone density by using bifosphonates. We also participated in this trial. It was a proof of principle, but it was not particularly efficacious. In any case, another important thing is knowing that the future potential of these techniques goes beyond movement disorders. Probably we're going to use it in the future for psychiatric disorders, brain tumors, epilepsy, the modulation of blood-brain barrier to use special molecules to act in the brain, for example, for Alzheimer's or ALS, and for neuromodulation. These are a few examples of experimental treatments which are into, or experimental trials which are into development. And let's go back to the present. Let's go back to the actual indications, and let's talk about the results. And first of all, we are going to talk about the results in essential tremor. The first treatments, the first reports were a proof of principle report, and the second was a randomized control trial with a very good quality and high degree of evidence. We've participated in several multicenter trials with large numbers of patients and quite long follow-ups to up to 1 year or more. And the result is almost always the same. The improvement on patients who do not respond to medication is of above 55%, 57% in the treated arm, which is much more than medication. So focused ultrasound thalamotomy is one of the most efficacious, has more efficacy in treating drug-resistant tremor. We also were able to identify prognostic factors, but I will mention this later. This is the result of the first randomized control trial. We can see here how the sham is The difference between the sham and the really treated patients is remarkable. It's very significant, and how the effect keeps impressive a long time. Following these those 56 patients, we have now thousands of patients treated with very similar results, even better, because there is a learning curve that allows us to do things better and allows us to have better patient selection. Another very important issue is safety. This I'm sorry for this busy table, but the main thing I have to say about unwanted or adverse effects is that they are mild and transient in the immense majority of patients. There are very few patients with permanent sequelae. The main point after thalamotomy is some gait and equilibrium balance problems during the first weeks after the treatment, but in the majority of patients, it fades away during the following months. Let me summarize the efficacy. Putting together all the studies and patients, the mean efficacy at 2 years is above 55% in the upper extremities treated side. The dynamics of the improvement is very remarkable during the first month, and then the tremor, it appears to come back a little bit, and this is just because the edema, the inflammation after the treatment fades away, and that's why it comes back. If we wanted to have a even bigger effect, we have to ablate a bigger quantity of brain, and then the number of adverse effects would be larger. There are longer follow-ups. For example, in our experience, we started in 2015. We have several patients with a follow-up of up to 7 years, and there are at least 70% of the patients who have a very good control after this time. There is some tremor progression, but in the patients whom we get to 60 degrees, the control of the tremor is good along the years. If the tremor comes back, it is possible to repeat the treatment because there is not a cumulative effect of temperature as it happens with radiation. Another very important thing when treating a non-malignant disease is to be as safe as possible. We prefer to repeat treatment that to have a permanent adverse effect. And that's why we are very keen in following adverse effect. The main adverse effect is this kind of disequilibrium or imbalance or gait disturbance due to the edema affecting cerebellothalamic connections and affecting sensory thalamus. The gait disturbance fades away during the first weeks, and no patient has this problem beyond 6 months. And the same happens with paresthesia. Paresthesia means tingling or numbness in the skin of the fingers of the treated side, of the treated hand side. And this is because the edema or some part of the lesion gets close to the sensory thalamus, to the part of the thalamus that conducts the sensation from the limbs to the cortex, and it's also transient, and if permanent, it's very mild. Other serious adverse effects are much less common, less dysarthria, difficulty in articulating words, or difficulty in swallowing, or paresis, motor weakness, which is really uncommon. And in our experience, we don't have any case of this. I insist, we prefer to repeat treatment than to have a permanent adverse effect. The majority of adverse effects take a few weeks to go away. In patients above 80-85 years, we are very concerned about the gait disturbance, especially when the patient is alone in the shower or walking. And that's why we recommend special safety measures after the treatment for the first weeks to the patient and their families. When we know things are going to be nice, when we are going to get good result, especially when you get a peak temperature, as in this last sonication in a recent patient of 63 degrees, then if the volume of the thalamotomy is appropriate, around 8 millimeters in diameter, and the peak temperature is around 60, we know that the result is going to be good and long-lasting. Another thing that predicts the outcome is age. Patients younger used to have a little bit better result than patients of advanced age. However, since the procedure is closed, elderly patients are particularly suitable for this technique because they cannot have deep brain stimulation. Of course, the progression of the disease, both in essential tremor and in Parkinson's disease, is a significant predictor of outcome. This is quite understandable. The volume of ablation and, of course, the experience of the team. We were now, at least this is our hope, we do things better, safer, and faster to the patient. And we've gone from a procedure that at the beginning of our experience took 3 hours or 4 hours to 2.5 hours nowadays. Another very important point, even though this is more technical, is placement. In stereotactic and functional neurosurgery, happens as it happens with real estate, when location is everything. This is a joke we have between us. If the lesion is properly placed between the motor and the sensitive thalamus, then the results are going to be much better. That's why we spend a good amount of time looking for the best spot to do the permanent thalamotomy. A question that probably many of you are thinking, both doctors and patients, is a comparison between focused ultrasound and the gold standard technique for movement disorders nowadays, which is deep brain stimulation. This is a retrospective bibliographical analysis. It's not a comparison head-to-head. This is not a prospective randomized trial. It's just a bibliographic comparison. With very strict criteria, the Italian team that conducted this study was very careful in comparing apples to apples, and this is the result. The control, the patients in focused ultrasound were a little bit older because of the reason this is a closed procedure. The improvement is 4 points lower than in deep brain stimulation, but deep brain stimulation was a bilateral procedure, and this can have some influence. And a remarkable thing that we found is the improvement in quality of life, even though it's a unilateral procedure in the majority of patients, is bigger in focused ultrasound than for DBS. Carrying a prosthesis in deep brain stimulation has its particular drawbacks, not very big, because deep brain stimulation is also very safe, even in the long term, but it has some related, some hardware-related problems, some battery replacements, some going back and forth to the doctor to check or to optimize the treatment that is more consuming for the patient. But it's more adaptable to the patient. But and this the neurologist in the audience will agree with us that even for deep brain stimulation, there is a progression and a kind of a tolerance to the deep brain stimulation in severe tremor patients. And perhaps lesion for those patients would be more appropriate. On the other hand, patients treated with deep brain stimulation in this comparison had a much longer duration of disease. So this is not a head-to-head comparison strict. So it's just to have some idea to the respect. I mentioned that this procedure is done mainly unilaterally. And this is because when thalamotomies in the 70s were done with radio frequency, the rate of serious adverse effects when thalamotomy was done, bilateral thalamotomy were done in a single lesion, the rate of adverse effects was very high, was unacceptably high. It got to 1/3 of the patients, and the patients had difficulty in articulating the speech. They had speech problems, dysarthria, and many of them also had swallowing problems. And in many cases, those problems were permanent. So after that time, after the 70s, bilateral thalamotomies end up being a no-no, a no way. With the staged thalamotomies with focused ultrasound, we have some experience about this. And the main issue is to do bilateral thalamotomy, the contralateral thalamotomy, at least after 6 months after the first thalamotomy, to let the brain circuits recover from the first thalamotomy. We have a personal experience of 3 patients with the bilateral thalamotomy. We are still following them to publish our results and to recruit more patients. There is a series from our colleagues in Madrid with 9 patients retrospective. And the most important thing is that there is a study, prospective study from Canada, from Toronto, with 10 patients in phase 2 trial. When the second thalamotomy was done smaller and more dorsal, higher in the thalamus to prevent those swallowing and speech problems. And the main control point for the patients was asking them, given what you know now, would you treat the second side again? And all of them answered, yes, I would. So doing with this very careful selection of patients with this stage procedure, doing first one side, and if everything goes all right, going to the second side, the safety and efficacy profile is very similar to the unilateral thalamotomy. In my personal experience, I've seen that the post-treatment course after the second thalamotomy, I will show you one of our bilateral cases. This is the case of a radiologist colleague from France. He had bilateral tremor, but he didn't want to have deep brain stimulation because the place where he was living, he's having his professional career and his life. This is the first thalamotomy. He treated the right side, and after 1 year, things went so well that he himself asked for the second thalamotomy. He was informed about the precedents, and we went to the second thalamotomy. You can see here the second thalamotomy, an immediate MR. Of course, the recent second thalamotomy appears to be bigger. After a postoperative course where the patient had mild dysarthria and mild balance problems, that now he has recovered completely. He's a young patient, he's in his 50s, and he is working again. So I can say that the post-treatment course after bilateral thalamotomy is a little bit more marked, the dysarthria and the balance problems, but as far as our experience is concerned, the symptoms go away in a few weeks. Just a note for Parkinson's disease, especially for Parkinsonian tremor. The procedure is the same, and the rationale is the same: to interrupt the tremor circuit in patients with Parkinson's. This, I know that this excludes many patients with Parkinson's disease that don't suffer tremor or in whom the tremor is not the main problem. Those problems suffering dyskinesias, in those patients we could consider polydotomias. It was done in the past. I myself did many polydotomies in the early 90s before DBS was really widespread, and the same for rigidity and akinesia. And here there are two next to experimental targets, not completely developed targets for Parkinsonian rigidity and akinesia: the polyhypothalamic tractotomy and subthalamotomy, both of them with studies backing them. This is the how a thalamotomy for Parkinson's disease looks. This is one of our earlier patients with Parkinsonian tremor treated in 2015. Even though the Parkinson's disease has progressed a long time, the patient still has a nice control of tremor, even though rigidity and akinesia have progressed. Another thing that you can see in this MR is that the patient has an atrophy that would have rendered her not a good candidate for deep brain stimulation. So the patient needed some kind of solution, and focused ultrasound offered her this open door, for saying it the way. This is a case of a pallidothalamic tractotomy. I don't have personal experience in this procedure, even though in many patients, the lesion extends to the ventral part of the thalamus to what we call zona inserta. And there are historical reports, especially for the German school of stereotactic and functional neurosurgery, reporting that this could be a very good target for Parkinson's disease. And the same for dyskinesia. We were doing pallidotomies in the past for levodopa-induced dyskinesias. This is a pallidotomy with a focus ultrasound. There is a prospective study carried in Korea with some technical difficulties, because this target is a little bit too lateral, far away from the center of the brain, and there are several technical issues which have to be improved. But the overall results are quite optimistic. We cannot discard polydotomy yet. But the main idea would be to go with focused ultrasound where we go with deep brain stimulation for Parkinson's disease. And this is a very rigorous and very provocative a randomized control trial from our colleagues in Madrid, from Professor Oveso's team. It's a remarkable study, very well done, but and the results were striking also. The only concern was the safety profile. Lesions in the subthalamic area can have more adverse effects than in the thalamus. Here we have a mix between, this is not as it happened with tremor. Everybody went to the thalamus for tremor. Here, for example, we are going to VIM and zona inserta to treat tremor for Parkinson's disease. Other colleagues go to pallidothalamic tract with very nice results. The study from Korea shows a nicer reduction of levodopa-induced dyskinesias, but with a little bit more serious adverse effects, as hemiparesis, or in the case of the studies done in subthalamic nucleus, I insist, with very good quality results. But the concern as far as dyskinesia or chorea embolism is concerned is not still solved. But the main thing is that this is a tool with a lot of potential. The main questions that we have to pose to this technique, for at least for Mondes disorders, is how these effects, these nice effects, are going to persist along years. Which modality, deep brain stimulation, radio frequency, thalamotomy, focused ultrasound thalamotomy, gamma knife thalamotomy, is more appropriated for each patient, for his or her disease, for his or her cranium, for his or her age. And finally, we have to gather more objective data on how bilateral thalamotomy are going to work in the future, both for safety and for efficacy. And with this, I finish my talk, and I thank you so much for your attention.
Thank you very much, Jorge, for this good presentation. We were asked to bring it because we had a question and answer session several weeks ago, and this question always popped up again and again. And I think it's a very exciting topic, and for neurosurgeons, but also for neurologists. And this is a question that always comes up. Is there a place for lesions? Is it possible to treat it? Like you said, this doctor from France, he decided to go for, not for DBS, but for a lesion, and you did bilateral lesions, very nicely done, and congratulations. So if you did it without side effects, I think this is really impressive. And so this is something that is all the time rumoring around, and unfortunately we do not have these possibilities in Austria. What we have in Austria, we have gamma knife. We have done a lot of thalamotomies with the gamma knife. We will talk later about that as well. But I think that this possibility to have another option to do these lesions more or less online, because you have the immediate effect from the patient. The patient can give you the effect, can tell you how it works. And you can make a test lesion as well. This is not possible. And it's really interesting to see that the godfather of radio surgery, so Lexell, he started with that. Because this was the idea. This was the idea. But unfortunately, at that time, they weren't able to do it. Because as you mentioned, it was the MRI that really gave a big push to this technique. This was one thing. But the other thing was, he was never able to do a hotspot with ultrasound. I think he failed with that. He didn't fail because he didn't have MRI, because they were able to calculate the target. But they weren't able to hit it up. Mm. And I think this is... because I know that Lexell decided to go for, first he also was considering putting radioactive seeds into the brain. This was also an option. But then finally, and we know what happened to this, he invented and he designed the gamma knife. And the gamma knife is a fantastic way to do these lesions. The only thing is that the gamma knife takes time and time and time. So we have to wait for almost 6 months to see a result, and you have the result immediately. So I think it's really a nice tool, and I'm so jealous that we don't have it. And maybe you explain a bit what is necessary to have it. What do you need? Not please go ahead.
What do we need in terms of investment? You mean or of cooperation? I don't want to get into personal details, but as soon as it disappears, since we don't have a gamma knife in Barcelona, I asked for this technique, because not only because of its immediate use for tremor and for movement disorders, but for due to its potential for treating other brain diseases. You know that half of my time I devoted to epilepsy surgery. And I thought that this could be a very nice tool for doing things for other diseases. And I asked it to the university hospital. But at that time, there was a financial limitation, as it always happens with public healthcare systems. But some private company in Barcelona acquired the system and asked for my cooperation, because I have been this kind of procedure for many years here in the public healthcare system in Catalonia, and I feel very, very fortunate and privileged to have this tool. Obviously, I think we are in primitive stages yet. This has to improve a lot. I would like to have less problems with the skull density ratio. I would like to have less problems with cranium irregularities, as it happened with some patient we share. I would like to not being obliged to shave our patients' heads, because this is important for them. But I think we are in the right way. And besides, I would like to go to more peripheral parts of the brain for treating other diseases as epilepsy or tiny brain tumors or other procedures. How we did it? It was by fortune. I was fortunate. There was somebody looking for a person doing this technique with some experience in movement disorder surgery, and I find somebody able to risk his their money, the family Alomaro, who were brave enough to invest in this, and it was this sweet being in the right place in the right moment. It was just by chance. But it is not a special merit.
Yeah, but for those who are not so familiar with that, I think it's important to mention that when you are doing this, you need an MRI, a dedicated MRI, because this procedure takes 4 hours. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes. This is an important thing to consider in a general hospital. You are going to block MR for at least 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah, these are 8 slots. So you can.
Yeah, this is a general hospital.
Diagnostic MRI in 8 patients in the same time or even more. This is one thing. And the other thing is that you need a dedicated table with all this stuff on it. And this makes the thing quite expensive. What you did not mention, but I would like to hear it from your side, is this is not the only indication for focused ultrasound. With your machine, you can do the brain, but there are a lot of options. Please talk about that as well.
Other options for focused ultrasound in the brain?
Not in the brain, no. Also, because this is a general principle.
Yes. It's been applied for uterine fibroids also. Mm-hmm. It's been also used for facet joint pain in the back. Facing joint pain, and for bone tumors, and there's also a third degree of experience in prostate cancer. Mm-hmm. These are the main fields, but no one of them has been as successful as neuro, because the counterpart is not that complicated. The same gynecologist who sends you patients with fibroid tumors is able to do a hysterectomy, for example. The same pain clinic that sends you the patient for doing back pain, facet joint pain, is able to do a rhizolasis. So from a investment point of view, and besides, we have to be to understand that the system I showed you is exclusive for cranium use. Mm-hmm.
So another question, I know the answer, but I would like you to talk about that. Why do our Korean colleagues have these problems with the bone?
Because from Eastern countries the cranium is thicker and less and more spongous. The trabecular bone in Asian people from Asia is thicker, and the absorbance the permeability of this bone to the ultrasound is much lower. So that's why the paper that was published late in 2021, a multicenter paper from Japan for focus ultrasound thalamotomy for tremor, was so valuable for us, because it was a real world paper. It was not a controlled trial. Mm-hmm. And they were able to overcome these difficulties.
But I think the answer would be, I think they eat more fish, so the bone is better. I think so.
But I don't know if it's some genetic thing or some some environment thing, but or both. You know which is the second country in the world in fish consumption after Japan?
Don't know. Spain?
Spain.
Ah, okay.
Yes.
And you don't have issues with the bone either?
No, not especially. Ah, okay. I've had some patients with 0.32, 0.32, 0.33. They were difficult, but not impossible. Mm. I think the main thing with patients with difficult, what we call difficult bone, is a good communication, being able to make them understand that that things are going to be a little bit more difficult. Some patients dismiss the option, and some patients go for example, for gamma knife, but the patient have the option. You have to inform them.
Okay, Dieter, I would ask you to go for the questions then.
Yes, I think we should start. So the first question you already answered is, have you done bilateral lesions on people with Parkinson's? You mentioned it.
No, with Parkinson's disease, I don't have done any.
This refers to the tremor patients, essential tremor, the bilateral ones. Okay.
Yes, it's a particular thing. The patient, as I told you, was living in a remote location it belongs to France, but it's a very remote location in the Pacific. And nice place, but for going and back and forth to have your deep brain stimulation system checked by your neurologist is a little bit complicated. Mm-hmm. But this was a very patient because he was very conscious of the implications of his decision. So that's why we started with him.
Okay. But,
we can consider the possibility of doing bilateral thalamotomy in Parkinsonian patients, but I think the patient selection will have to be even more strict than with essential tremor patients, with Parkinsonian patients.
Okay, let's go to the next question. Perhaps you have an answer for that. Would you please explain to us how many interventions were performed in the clinics in Bonn and Kiel, and what the success rate was? When will operations start in Kassel?
I don't really know. I know they started. I think 2 years ago in Bonn. But we don't have the results yet. At least I haven't seen the results published. And in Kiel, I think it's even more recent, the practice, this is not going to be different, very different from other teams, I think, because the protocols are convergent, as it happened with deep brain stimulation, that at the beginning everybody was doing it in a very different way. And now things are getting more standardized. And I don't have the actual results. I'm sorry, I don't have the answer for this. But I honestly don't believe it's going to be different from other teams, besides the small learning curve. But you have to consider, as it happened with our team, that we didn't move from general neurosurgery to focus ultrasound. We moved from functional neurosurgery, functional stereotactic neurosurgery, to another tool, but with the same mindset of functional neurosurgery. So the change is not that big.
Okay? It's all the thing. It's only the instrument which are changed. Instead of using the knife, you use the ultrasound.
Yes, it's the idea, the concept is the same. You have to get adapted to the sonication concept and to manage power and to manage the duration of the sonication, and especially also managing time, because you don't want the patient to get very tired inside the machine. But it is not that long for the patient, because as Professor Ayers witnessed, after every single sonication, we go into the room and talk with the patient and explore him or her, so the patient feels very accompanied, very protected during all the procedure. I think this is a very important and remark I had to make.
Finally, I have a really interesting question, which interests me as well. What is your personal expectation in terms of the split between DBS and focused ultrasound treated patients with PD in 3 to 5 years?
Let me start with essential tremor, because we have more evidence on this, or more numbers. I think in regard of the pandemics, who has slowed everything, but I think that in 2021, the number of patients in the world that were treated for essential tremor, for deep brain with deep brain stimulation and with focused ultrasound, was somewhat almost even. But I think that in 2022, I think that it's going to be the inversion of this. I think that more patients with essential tremor are going to be treated with focused ultrasound with the brain stimulation. This is not going to happen yet for Parkinson's disease. For Parkinson's disease, we have to describe a safe and proper target. First of all, we have to describe a good target, and a good target that can be reproduced among the different teams. I mean, the Madrid team is very keen of doing subthalamotomy, but very few teams in the world are willing to follow this, and this perhaps is a problem, it's a limitation. Other teams are going in the direction of treating, of doing pallidotomies, but you know that pallidotomies are not exclusively, but very specific for dyskinesia. And besides, we have a kind of mixture targets as pallidothalamic tract, or the kind of target we try to apply, which is zona inserta ventrolateral thalamus, VIN, which is, as far as I'm concerned, the way to go. So there is going to be a niche of patients that are not suitable for deep brain stimulation in Parkinson's disease due to their age, or due to the brain atrophy, or due to preference, that they didn't have this possibility in the past. They weren't suitable for deep brain stimulation. And I would say that rather than in Parkinson's disease, a focused ultrasound is not a big competition for deep brain stimulation yet, because we have to describe a better target. But it's going to widen the scope of patients with Parkinson's disease that will benefit from non-drug treatments. I think this is my conclusion. I think it's not going to be a big competition yet, but it's going to benefit more patients that are not responding to drugs properly.
Thank you very much for
that. So maybe for Parkinson's disease, the saying from Benabid is true: don't make a hole in a sick brain. I think for Parkinson's disease, probably this is the case, but for essential tremor, the hole is the best option, definitely. compared to our results that we have in deep brain stimulation for essential tremor?
Yes. I don't know where things are going to go, at least for lesioning. I think perhaps what will happen is a change in paradigm. I mean, that we will have deep brain stimulation, non-invasive, putting antennas subcutaneous. There are many things in prospect right now, but if you tell me what's going to happen along 2022, we are going to treat a good proportion of, for example, it has happened to my own practice. In Barcelona, we started treating almost exclusively essential tremor, and now the proportion of Parkinsonian tremors we are treating is increasing, and nowadays is between 25% and 30% of the patients, because we don't have to forget that Parkinson's disease is a even worse disease than essential tremor, but essential tremor is much more frequent. So that's why we get this mix.
Would like to
I
have
know, as a neurologist, which is your opinion about this technique?
A last question: where do you see focus ultrasound and gamma knife? I think this is something. What decision criteria would you take for sending a patient either to focus ultrasound or to gamma knife? Both are ablational therapies, and maybe one word about that.
I cannot talk that much about the gamma knife because I don't have personal experience. All what I know is what I have studied from your papers and from the papers of your colleagues in radio surgery. I will say that both have advantages and inconvenience. If you find somebody with a very difficult bone, with an SDR of, I don't know, 0.27, I would send him or her to you. Okay. But in the other hand, if the patient is very frail and you have some concern on getting serious adverse effects, and you want to check the adverse effects intra-procedurally, perhaps we could consider focus ultrasound, even though I know that in experienced hands, gamma knife is very safe. But I would say that the learning curve in focus ultrasound is better because you can check the patient intra-procedurally. And besides, there is another thing of it, and that is availability. For example, in France, there is no focus ultrasound. In Austria, there is no focus ultrasound. And if the patient has to travel abroad, perhaps for some patients is a personal, financial concern.
My own experience with the gamma knife is that the gamma knife, so radiosurgery, is very forgiving. So you have really 6 months and the brain can recover. I never saw really a serious side effect when doing gamma knife radiosurgery in the thalamus. On the other hand, what I saw often is that in elderly people, when they finally they stop shaking, they don't remember even that they shook before because it's so long. Huh?
Yeah.
And I think this is very hard when you say I do a procedure today and maybe in 6 months I'm better. So there you have a clear advantage that you have the patient, you check him repeatedly. I had a chance to visit you and to see how this back and forth is going. And finally, the patient leaves your hospital the next day and he's tremor-free. Yeah. I think this is a big advantage to radiosurgery. So I think, of course, it's depending what you have. We don't have it in Austria. Maybe we will get it once, but currently there's no one available. The Germans, I didn't know that Kassel will get one. I knew that there's one in Bonn.
In Bonn, yes.
Yeah. Thank you very much. It was a very exciting talk. It was very exciting for me again to bring something lesional here, making holes in the brain, like Benabit said. And I think there is a renaissance also for this technique, be it by Gamma Knife, be it by focused ultrasound, or even by traditional ways. And I mentioned Benabit, and I'm very happy that I convinced him to come to us, I think, on the 6th of April. He will be the next one. He will talk here on this place on the origins of deep brain stimulation. And definitely I will address the question that I addressed to you. Don't make a hole in a sick brain, also to him. And thank you very much for being with us tonight, or yeah, now tonight, this afternoon. Next week we go on again in German, Tannenhilfe bei tiefer Hirnstimulation. I will talk that time. And thank you for being here. And those who have not been able to see it, they can re-see it, they can go back. It will be online in several minutes from now. Thank you, and bye-bye to Barcelona. Thank you, Dieter, as well.
Thank you very much.
To the whole audience.
Thank you for your interest. I hope I've been clarifying, and it's been a true
pleasure
for me.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.